Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our December ASAF meeting. Andreas is fresh off a plane from Washington, so I'm helping out today. So I'll chair today's meeting, and he'll be back in control tomorrow. Just before we start off with the agenda, I just wanted to take a moment, given this is the first public opportunity that we've had, to remember two of our very special members of the ASAF community who have sadly passed away, and we'll miss very much. Atsushi Kogasaka, from the chair of the ASBJ, and Wonhee Han, director at the CASB, both very dear friends and very big contributors to our ASAF discussion, so we'll miss them very much. With that, moving on, the first topic we have this morning is Agenda Paper 1. EFRAG are going to present their intangibles project. Shall I hand over to Chiara?
Thank you, Sue, and good morning to all of you. Thank you for the opportunity to present our discussion paper. It was issued in August this year, and it will be open for comments until June next year, so you still have all time to contribute to our discussion. Of course, we hope and expect that our work can be instrumental and helpful to the ASB when they will soon start a project. If we look at the feedback from the agenda consultation, this topic is ranking very high in the priority. So we hope to be as synergic as possible. I'm today with Rasmus Sommers, who has been the project leader for this project. Can we go to the next slide, Rasmus, please? Okay, so the topic was selected following a public consultation on our proactive research agenda in 2018, together with crypto assets and variable and contingent consideration, which are the three projects where we are working at the moment. And we started with a number of interviews with various types of stakeholders to understand a bit better the nature of the various accounting issues. And in 2020, we issued a literature review prepared by a team of academics that showed a considerable amount of academic work, but also a lack of evidence on what are the users' need with reference to intangibles. We set up an advisory panel on intangibles in 2020, composed by practitioners, so preparers, users, and evaluators of intangible intensive sectors, such as biotechnology, pharma, or telecommunication. And Bertrand Perrin was one of the members of that panel before joining the ISP. Also, Nick Anderson was observing the works of that panel, and I had the honor of chairing the panel itself. So the contents of our discussion paper are built on a dialogue, among other things, on the dialogue among these experts. Each of them brought the concrete examples of how, in the practice of these more developed sectors, users and preparers have found a common ground in terms of practices. So the approaches that we explore in the paper benefit also from this practical ground. You can move to the next slide, Rasmus. So our paper does not present a single solution, but rather explores a package of solutions. We see that different users have different needs on this topic, because also the category of the assets that we are assessing is very broad. And the solution, I mean, there cannot be only one solution that fit all for all. So that's why we explore recognition and disclosure approaches. We also consider a broader scope than only the intangibles that meet the definition of assets in the conceptual framework, because very often users are lacking information about the factors and the resources that the entities use in their value creation, and they do not meet the definition of assets. At this stage, the discussion paper do not elaborate on the topic of interaction with the sustainability information, because when we developed the paper, the status of the debate on the sustainability was still to come. So this is something that we may consider further, because, of course, intangibles are a common important component of the two dimensions, financial and sustainability. So in particular, one of the approaches that we explore on the narrative information has a material overlap with what one could expect to find in sustainability. Next slide. So what are the issues identified? I said that there are a number of issues. First of all, there are evidences that the value relevance of financial statements is decreasing. And this could also be due to the fact that financial statements do not reflect information about intangibles, which have become more important and more entities have used them or are of big importance, bigger than previously. But while there is consensus on the need for better information, is less obvious which solution we should explore, which way we should go. So one of the issue, the key issue we see is the definition and the recognition criteria in IAS 8 and the different treatment between acquired intangibles, which are recognized on balance sheet, and internally generated intangibles, which are not recognized on balance sheet. So this is resulting basically in a number of issues. First, the financial statements do not reflect the underpinning drivers of value creation in intangibles intensive businesses. Second, the performance measures are distorted. Return on asset ratios do not provide useful information because the asset part is not properly reflected. But also the costs incurred to build an intangibles internally are not capitalized. So the income of a period may not be directly matched with the expenses of the same period. Also some issue, some users spoke of an issue, the income statement being hit twice in the same period if an entity acquires an intangible, both for the amortization of what is recognized under the PPA approach, and also the costs that are not capitalized and that are often needed to replace over time the acquired intangibles. Of course, also comparability is adversely affected, and it's difficult to compare entities that grow organically with entities that grow through acquisition. So, but these are the main issues, but there are collateral problems also. For example, if internally generated intangibles were to be recognized, which measurement approach should be taken? Cost could create issues in the difficulty to identify and allocate internal costs, but also would not be relevant in providing information about the real value of the intangible and future cash flows. But also fair value could be problematic as there is no active market for most intangibles. There is also an issue about the labels of intangibles, the different categories of this very large asset class. And also, as I mentioned at the beginning, we're not talking about only assets that meet the criteria of the conceptual framework, but also in general, resources that the entity uses. So as the solution cannot be only one, we propose a package of solutions. You can go to the next slide, yes. So we have a chapter on recognition and measurement, and Recognition is, of course, the most contentious of the possible path to follow, because it opens a number of issues and potentially conflicts with the conceptual framework, depending on how broad the category of internally generated could be. But we also understand that for the users, what is important is to have a reliable and useful information, irrespective of the fact that is sitting on the face of the primary financial statements or in the notes. So that's why we explore also the other chapters, the different approaches to the disclosure. And Rasmus will tell you more about this. So Rasmus, you can continue with the other slides.
Yeah, thank you. And as Kira mentioned, the discussion paper considers various approaches on how users of financial statements can get better information on intangibles. The first approach is to amend the recognition and measurement requirements for intangibles. The discussion paper considers whether recognition in the statement of financial position should potentially be a solution for all types of intangibles, but presents the preliminary view that it should probably only be considered for items meeting the definition of an asset, because including items that, for example, would not be controlled by an entity, but, for example, just available to an entity, would result in significantly other requirements for intangibles than for other assets. The discussion paper therefore only considers when intangible assets should be recognized and how these should be measured based on the guidance in the conceptual framework on the selection of a measurement basis and what the advantages and disadvantages are of measurement at cost and at fair value. And Kira just mentioned some of these issues. On the recognition, the discussion paper considers the obvious approaches to recognize all internally generated intangible assets and to recognize no internally generated intangible assets. Then it also considers the approach to recognize an internally generated intangible asset if at the start of its development certain conditions are met. This means that if the conditions are only met subsequently, no asset would be recognized. An alternative approach is what is termed conditional recognition in the discussion paper. Under this approach, an asset is recognized when and not if certain conditions are met. The issue is then, when we measure the intangible asset at cost, what do we do with the cost related to the asset that were held before the recognition conditions would be met? The discussion paper presents different approaches. One approach would be only to capitalize the cost from the time the condition is met. This is illustrated in example A on the slide. And this means that cost held before the recognition criteria met would be expensed when incurred and would thus not be reflected in the measurement of the acquired asset. Another approach is to consider that before the conditions are met, costs are capitalized, but the resulting asset is then fully impaired. And when the conditions are met, this impairment loss would then be reversed, which would affect profit or loss positively. This approach is illustrated in example B on the slide. Finally, you could recognize the cost in other comprehensive income until the conditions are met, at which point the cost would be included in the asset. This approach would not affect profit or loss and has therefore received some initial support from some, but it is not an approach that will make other comprehensive income easier to understand. In addition to considering how recognition criteria should apply, it is, of course, also necessary to discuss what the recognition criteria should be. And when developing the discussion paper, we received many different suggestions on this, including whether the asset could be sold or would have a commercial value, whether it could be monitored for impairment, and whether expected expenditures can be estimated, just to mention a few of the suggestions. And this slide then lists some of the advantages and disadvantages of conditional recognition. One of the issues considered in the list is the extent to which the approach can reduce distorted IFRS performance measures. In this regard, it should be kept in mind that it is only through recognition of more internally generated intangibles that IFRS performance measures can become less distorted for intangibles intensive indices. That being said, however, IFRAC has heard differing views from users on how important the IFRS performance measures are. Some users do indeed not find it problematic that they will have to make corrections to the reported IFRS figures when performing their analysis. It has not been a purpose of this discussion paper to investigate what factors result in the differing views of users on this issue. Another issue listed in relation to the conditional recognition approach is that the approach mentioned before, where you would recognize an impairment loss until a certain criteria would be met, at which time you would reverse that impairment loss, results in fluctuations in profit or loss. If you use the approach under which the costs are initially recognized in other comprehensive income, you can avoid this. However, this approach will result in a new manner to use other comprehensive income. The discussion paper also mentions issues with the reliability of the measurement of internally generated intangibles and intangibles acquired together with other assets, for example, in a business combination. And there are issues both in relation to fair value measurement and measurement at cost. Accordingly, although recognition and measurements could be the only manner to deal with the issues related to the reported IFRS performance figures, there are also many problems with recognizing more intangible assets. It is therefore questionable whether overall the benefits of such an approach would outweigh the associated costs. An alternative to recognition and measurement could thus be considered, and such an alternative approach could be to provide better disclosures on specific intangibles. Also, such an approach could supplement recognition of some internally generated intangibles. The discussion paper suggests that those intangibles on which information should be provided should be those intangibles that are key to an entity's business model. That is, an entity should first identify its business model and then assess what intangibles are essential for this business model. For most entities, it will be straightforward to identify the essential intangibles. However, for other entities, it may be more problematic. Accordingly, guidance on how to identify the essential intangibles may be needed. The information on key intangibles can be both qualitative, quantitative, or both. The discussion paper includes examples of information that could be relevant to provide both generally and for certain intangibles. General information that could be useful includes, for example, information about the entity's business model and its value drivers. Examples of information that could be relevant for particular types of intangibles include, for customers, the concentration, the attrition rate, the cost of acquiring a customer, customer satisfaction, and similar. We have also discussed with our advisory panel on intangibles and in other cases whether it would be useful to provide information on the fair values of unrecognized intangible assets in the financial reports. Here we have often heard that the facts and assumption used by management to estimate those fair values could be more useful information than the fair values themselves. The discussion paper accordingly does not propose disclosure of the fair value of intangibles. One of the advantages of information relating to specific intangibles is that it also provides information on how the entity is creating value by linking the identification of key intangibles with the entity's business model and providing information on these intangibles. The information is generally assumed to be less subjective than recognizing a measurement intangibles at fair value, and the information could be assumed to be less costly to provide than recognizing more intangibles on the statement of financial position. One of the disadvantages of information relating to specific intangibles is that in some cases it is difficult to determine the particular intangible the disclosures should relate to, as intangibles are often interrelated. And the fact that many intangibles do not create value on their own also means that sometimes information about each specific key intangible does not reflect the value the intangible is creating for the entity in combination with other assets. The last approach mentioned in the discussion paper, on the other hand, focuses more on the overall value all intangibles are creating together than on providing information on each of the key intangibles. The last approach focuses on providing information on the expenses that are recognized in the financial statements in the period, but relate or may relate to income that will only be recognized in future periods. The information can be useful for assessing the financial performance of a given period because it would provide information on the expenses recognized in a period that relate to future periods and should thus not be considered when evaluating the performance of that given period. By considering the expenses relating to future periods, the information can also be useful to assess whether future profitability will increase or decrease compared to the current situation, depending on the level of investments in unrecognized intangibles. The discussion paper presents two approaches to provide information about future-oriented expenses. Under the first approach, the entity states what expenses recognized in a period it considers relate to the future. Under the other approach, the entity provides more granular information about the expenses as recognized in a period to enable users of financial statements to make their own assessment about the expenses recognized that relate to future periods. On this slide, examples of more specific information that could be provided on the expenses recognized in the financial statements are provided. That is how information could be provided to help users form their own views about the expenses recognized in a period that may relate to future periods. The table presented on the slide is thus also only an example that could be used, but it's not proposed in the discussion paper that providing information on future-oriented expenses would necessarily mean that entities would have to provide such a table, which would mean more detailed registration by companies and where you could expect many empty cells. One of the advantages of the approach to provide information on future-oriented expenses is that unlike the approach where information is provided on specific intangibles, a fixed terminology to be used to distinguish different intangibles is not necessary. However, to the extent the information should be provided by disclosing more detailed information on recognized expenses, it may be necessary to provide guidance on the different categories of expenses that should be used. Also, as the approach is based on the combined effect on earnings of an entity, it can therefore take into account that intangibles often do not create much value on a standalone basis, but together with other intangibles and other assets. A disadvantage of the approach is that users would not receive information on specific key intangibles for the entity's business model. However, information on the entity's business model can be derived from the more granular information on the expenses, as it will here appear how an entity is spending its money. And in addition to the granular information on the expenses, for example, the number of employees, the employee cost per function, per segment and region, could also provide information on the entity's business model. However, it is a disadvantage that the effectiveness of investments in intangibles is not taken into account under this model. You can thus only see the amount of expenses that may relate to the future, but there is, for example, no impairment test to tell you whether you can expect to recover those expenses. Also, unlike some other approaches that have been suggested on how to provide information on future-oriented expenses by other organizations and individuals, the approach presented in this discussion paper does not suggest entities to keep a record of future-oriented expenses. Accordingly, the benefits of previous expenses cannot be matched with the resulting revenue unless the users try to keep such a record. The reason why the discussion paper is not suggesting a record of future-oriented expenses, which could also be termed unrecognized intangibles, is that it was not identified as a need by the users EFRA consulted when preparing the discussion paper. And this could also relate to the fact that the users EFRA consulted generally favored the approach under which the entity would provide more information to enable users distinguishing between expenses related to the past, current, and to the future periods, rather than providing the management assessments on this. The discussion paper also suggests that information on risk opportunity factors are provided. The approach presented is limited to information that is material and specific to the entity, that is, the risk and opportunities linked to the key intangibles, whether or not specified according to the entity's business model. And some examples of information that can be provided on risks and opportunity factors are listed on this slide. as it appears some of the information, such as the customer concentration, was also mentioned under the approach on specific information on intangibles. And with this, I will hand back to Chiara, who will end our presentation.
Thank you, Rasmus. Next slide, please. So there are a number of discussion points in the discussion paper collateral to the three approaches presented by Erasmus. So first question is, of course, which is the best way to go and how to combine the approaches that we have taken into consideration. Another issue is the need for a common terminology. Would it be beneficial? I mean, Erasmus has explained the relevance of this point and what are the difficulties there. We know that this is an area where preparers often say that the information is of a sensitive nature, and so there is a gap between the user's expectation and what the preparers are ready to provide, and commercial sensitiveness will be an issue for the standard setting. Another topic is where the information should be located. Should it be in the notes to the financial statements or in the management commentary? And what are the consequences in terms of reliability, including, for example, audit of the information? Will the provision of this information affect also the entity's access to finance? This is another question that we have. And are there any requirements that we have today in IFRSs that may be removed not to overload the financial statements? Next slide. These are the questions for constituents in our discussion paper. So we ask if all the issues are relevant or there are additional issues. Which is the best way to go and how to combine the different approaches. For recognition and measurement, we ask whether the described methodology to allow internally generated intangibles to be recognized would be useful. On information on specific intangibles, should this information be limited to the key intangibles? What do you agree with the advantages or the disadvantages, or are there other issues to consider? Similar for the future-oriented expenses, risks, and opportunities, are these approaches considered useful? What are the advantages and disadvantages? Are there any factors that we didn't consider? Where the information should be provided, and what are the additional issues to consider? So these are the questions for this session. Of course, we are very, very keen in having your reactions to this paper. I forgot to mention at the beginning that we leveraged, of course, on work done already by others before us, including members of this forum. I mentioned the Korean County Standard Setter, for example, who came Standard Board, who came a couple of times to present at our TEG and advisory panel, but also the FRC, who did another research before us. So it's a good example of us taking into consideration the work of others. And similarly, we would be open to organize events, forum, and exchanges of views also with your constituents during this long consultation period. So with this, I think we can back to Sue for the discussion.
Thanks, Chiara and Rasmus. Okay, who would like to provide any comments, observations on EFREG's paper?
So I may start. I have some summary of the comments from AOSSG members.
Can I just remind people to put in the chat room too, and then I'll just follow the chat room for coming in. But Helena, if you want to start, that's great. Thanks.
Sorry. We had three AOSSG members who commented on question one, whether the issues are relevant and valid. So All members actually expressed views that the issue identified in the discussion paper are relevant and valid. One member commented that they are currently undertaking outreach and research in this area, and another member highlighted the importance of further research into users' needs, as mixed feedback was received. Users also commented that they obtain sufficient information from other sources, for example, press releases or analyst report, and the research should also focus on what information should be disclosed in the financial reports and what disclosures should be made in other reports. We collected some additional suggestions on the areas that should be considered. So the suggestions are, for example, presentation. That presentation should be considered as part of the project. Also, review of IS 38 intangibles for consistency with the conceptual framework, as the conceptual framework has been substantially revised since IS 38 was issued. And the discussion paper mentioned some asymmetry between accounting for different assets. So in respect of that asymmetry, the members also noted that there is also asymmetry in disclosures about unrecognized internally generated intangible assets and unrecognized present obligation, or recognition of some assets under applicable standards that are similar in nature to internally generated intangible assets. And the example was insurance acquisition cash flow paid before the related insurance contract is recognized. We also had some other comments from other members that also highlighted that comprehensive review of IS-38 should be undertaken to ensure that it's fit for purpose, and that they acknowledge that users of financial statements would benefit if IASB determined how the financial statements can provide more complete view of entities' intangibles. And in undertaking that comprehensive review of IS-38, the members also recommended that IASB needs to ensure that it appropriately addresses requirements for the recognition and measurement of internally generated intangible assets, such as software and development costs, then determine the extent to which emerging financial reporting issues, for example, emission trading rights, cloud-based computing arrangements, and cryptocurrencies should be addressed by IFRS standard or intangible assets, and also consider any potential interrelationship between IFRS standard on intangible assets and any future sustainability standards issued on intangibles.
Thank you very much, Helena. Jim.
Thank you, and thank you for going through the paper with us. I find it particularly useful at this point to think about, given the topic that we'll talk about next, the agenda consultation. You'll hear that much of the input that we received is not dissimilar from the ISB input, and a lot of it focused on intangibles. So I think I don't know that I have answers to even where our board might head with each of the things, Chiara, that you lay out, but maybe some thoughts from what we've heard is at least preliminarily, maybe it's not an all or nothing, meaning all need to be recognized or none. I think we heard internal use software and intangibles that are used, I'd say, in a less transformational way, maybe have aspects that are not dissimilar from PP&E, where cost is a more relevant measure for those assets, and at least our standards draw some distinctions that I think users and others thought were not necessary. So perhaps we could think about changing recognition guidance for certain intangibles. Preliminary results, I would say, are suspect as to whether a project to move all intangibles onto all intangible assets, let's use the definition in the conceptual framework, onto the balance sheet at some measure. I think we get feedback that says cost might not be relevant for many of those. And as you observe in the paper, fair value imposes challenges that probably make that standard infeasible, at least at the current time and in many people's view. And so I do get to the disclosure alternatives. I really, in particular, like the table that you lay out in slide 16. I struggle in my own mind with telling management to make a distinction between future-oriented and current. Even when you look at that table, something like marketing expense, if I ran an ad campaign at the beginning of the period, future-oriented might have been, that was to drive sales over the next 3 months, but nonetheless, it was marketing expense and it occurred during the period. So providing users with the breakdown of those expenses in those categories, you know, some aspect is going to be related to the past, some aspect the future, some will be very hard to tell. So a lot of what we heard from users in our outreach is they just want more disaggregation. This looks like what some of our users have said, by nature, by function, that table sort of lays it out, but for the key drivers. And so I think this will be helpful for us to think about as we move forward. Again, I particularly like that one. I also do like the idea that it doesn't have to be just limited to the expenses itself, but sort of the risks and opportunities. The one challenge I would point out there, maybe that isn't on the slide, is depending on location, sort of verifiability and auditability of certain measures. For example, things like customer satisfaction, employee satisfaction, quality of oversight functions. Are those things sufficiently well defined that you could have across companies people saying, yes, this is an objective measure of customer satisfaction that we actually could then include in some verifiable and auditable way? Those aren't to say we shouldn't consider it, but I think that's got to be another aspect of, depending how far the disclosures go, is it really achievable in a verifiable way, or does that lend itself more to narrative discussion as opposed to a specific measure of those types of things? But again, I think a very useful paper, and we'll see where our board goes, but I would suspect it probably tends more toward the disclosure side.
Thanks, Jim. Pauline.
Thank you. Can I start by congratulating FWAG on what I thought was a really excellent paper and very well presented just now? I found a lot of food for thought in that, and I'm sure it's going to be something we're going to keep coming back to over the next year or so. And I certainly think it's a really good basis for the ISB as it starts its thinking about intangibles. We're at quite an early stage at the UKEB in looking at intangibles, so I'm not going to give you detailed responses to your questions at this stage. We have clearly, as a result of the agenda consultation, identified it as a very high priority issue for the ISB, and we're really pleased to see that that's being picked up. In looking at it, though, we think the most important aspect is going back to users and talking to them in more detail about what it is they actually need from this information. I was interested to note the reference in the FWAG paper to their commissioned literature review, which identified, I think, that the potential impact of current intangibles accounting on the decline in the value relevance of financial statements. And I think this is something that needs to be explored in more detail. From a UK perspective, we are planning next year to carry out a long-term research project looking at intangible assets. And the intention is to build on the work that FWAG has done. We're not planning to sort of overlap in that sense. But I think we'll look a little bit more at the user views on some of the issues that are being proposed. As a result of that work, I hope that we'll be in a position to give some more detailed feedback to FWAG over the course of their consultation period. This is a personal view, but I'd really like to pick up on the suggestion of trying to do something with you on this at some stage as we progress this project further, because I think there could be some interesting interactions on that topic. So apologies for not being able to give you detailed comments at this stage, but you've certainly given me a lot of food for thought, and I should go back and think about this in a lot more detail. Thank you.
Thanks, Pauline. You.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Sue. First of all, we think this discussion paper is very comprehensive based on the feedback from the stakeholders in China. I would like to share our preliminary views on the six questions on slide 22. The first question, as far as we know, the issue raised in the discussion paper also exists in China, and these issues have raised concerns of Chinese stakeholders. Currently, our staff are also doing some research and conducting outreach activities on the accounting issues related to intangibles in order to identify possible issues and explore potential solutions in China. Meanwhile, we suggest the ISB doing a comprehensive review on the definition, recognition, measurement, and disclosure on intangibles. This comment has been reflected in our comment letter on the third agenda consultation. That's our comment on question one. Question two, which way to go? We agree that each of the three approaches have their own advantages and disadvantages. On one hand, recognizing and measuring the intangibles in the primary financial statement will provide the most relevant and useful information, but the cost of preparation and uncertainty are also relatively high. On the other hand, the disclosure only approach, that means making disclosures in the notes to the financial statement or the management commentary, has a relatively low preparation cost, but the relevance and usefulness of the information are reduced. At the same time, estimates and judgments are also involved in deciding what information to be disclosed and how to make the disclosure. Therefore, regarding the question on how the approaches could be combined, as we just initiate our own research, our project team just have some very preliminary views. For example, intangibles that meet the recognition criteria and the measurement requirements should be presented in a primary financial statement, while the material ones that could not meet the recognition criteria and the measurement requirement could be disclosed in the notes or in the management commentary. That's our comment on question two. On question three, regarding the recognition, based on the feedback from the stakeholders, we believe that the current recognition criteria in IAS 38 for internal generated intangibles are too strict, so that these economic resources that contribute most to the value of an entity could not be recognized in the financial statement. Therefore, we agree that the recognition criteria in IAS 38 should be amended. Regarding the four recognition approaches proposed in the discussion paper, we currently prefer the third one, that is the conditional recognition of an asset. This approach is similar to the current accounting for internal generated intangibles. However, for the conditions, we suggest further more research to explore whether the current capitalization criteria in IAS 38 can be still used or any amendment is needed. Regarding the measurement, our preliminary view is that the cost model is appropriate, and we don't suggest introducing revaluation model. The main reason is that in terms of the internal generated intangibles, the market is usually inactive, so that a lot of estimates and judgment are involved in the valuation. In addition, the implementation cost may be very high. However, we also noted that the fair value information of some specific intangibles is very useful to the users. So we suggest this kind of information could be disclosed, but it should be disclosed in the notes if necessary. On question four, based on the principle of cost benefit, we generally agree with the first question. So the first question is yes. In addition to that, when identifying intangibles that are key to an entity's business model, a lot of estimates and judgment are involved. So we suggest further more research on the criteria of this kind of disclosure. Our comments on question five, first one is regarding the information on future-oriented expenses. We believe this kind of information is relevant because such information reflects investment information that is beneficial to an entity's future development, which could provide useful information for users to predict the future performance, although it cannot meet the capitalization criteria for assets. Regarding how to determine such expenses, our preliminary view is that since the management has the most sufficient information, this kind of information should be based on the management's understanding and knowledge, where in the same time, it's also necessary to consider users' information needs and take the principles of principle of materiality into account. That's our comments on question five. The last question regarding where to provide the information. We think the placement of information depends on the nature of the information. If the information is related to the financial information, we suggest disclosing it in the notes. If it is related to the business plan or future development of an entity, we suggest disclosing it in the management commentary or sustainable reporting. Lastly, regarding additional issue, our preliminary view is that it's necessary to make a clear definition or introduce a common terminology on intangibles. And in addition, we suggest a strict and a clear definition of commercially sensitive information. Otherwise, the application of disclosure requirement will cause diversity in practice. Thank you very much.
Patrick, hoping we can hear you.
Do you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, apologies for being on the phone. I had connection problems. And good morning to you all. A few remarks. First of all, it's a very interesting contribution to a very difficult topic, and I would like to congratulate EFRAG for doing it, in particular Chiara and Rasmus. I have a number of remarks because I think intangibles are to be considered now from a broader perspective, i.e. I am of the opinion that due to the emergence of sustainability reporting and the potential creation of standards, or the upcoming creation of standards for sustainability reporting, both in the EU and also under the IFRS Foundation via the ISSB, I think we need to, we cannot take only the perspective of financial reporting. In my view, it has to be connected. So I, from a general standpoint, I would recommend that this discussion be pursued under a joint umbrella of the sustainability reporting standard setters and the financial reporting standard setters. And by the way, we somehow are considering the two when we discuss management reporting or management commentary. We are of course asking ourselves where what is the placeholder for this information. So it's a connectivity issue in my view, which has to be addressed from a clear allocation of responsibilities between the two legs of corporate reporting under a standardized approach. Because the underlying question, in my view, is the way forward to increase the recognition of assets and or the information about those intangibles at the risk of destabilizing the current well-understood platform for financial reporting, or is it in creating a seamless relationship between what is well understood under financial reporting concepts and the future sustainability reporting standards? I take a couple of examples. If I take what is mentioned under slide 7, where you mention what types of intangibles should be considered for recognition, and the answer is those meeting the definition of an asset, which is interesting because we need also to consider that definition of an asset. I believe that not all intangibles meet the definition of assets. At least when you take into account the value creation perspective, you know, let's take for instance the integrated reporting approach to the multi-capitals, then you will see that part, if not many of those, will not meet ever the definition of an asset. So that's where the evolution at financial reporting level would probably not fully meet the expectations of investors and other stakeholders. Because if we restrict to the type of information, to the type of intangibles that are meeting or that are possibly meeting in due course the definition of an asset, we might be a little too restrictive. So I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but I'm saying that there is a limitation here. If we take also recognition and measurement, of course, the risk in particular, should we, you know, take, for instance, the idea of recognizing all, even using OCI might be destabilizing the current perception of financial reporting and financial statements. And measuring, you know, at fair value is, of course, interesting, but extremely, extremely complex. So, you know, before this, what I'm saying is that it's not information that is not interesting. I'm saying it's information that should find its placeholder maybe on the quote-unquote management commentary / sustainability reporting side. So I am keen to mention the fact that in order to create a seamless relationship between financial reporting and sustainability reporting, we need to have proper anchor points. So, you know, wherever the border is, we need to make sure that there is no gap or no overlap. So I think that the creation of the ISSB, as well as the creation of the SRB at the EU level, are going to be confronted with the clear definition of this border in the interest of, you know, the connectivity in general. And that boils down to also a real thought process about financial materiality. Because, you know, financial materiality is a concept that is used in both worlds. It's used in financial reporting, of course, under a conceptual framework, but it's also used in sustainability reporting. So we have to define, and that's, again, a border issue, what is financially material from a financial reporting perspective and what is financially material for a sustainability reporting environment. So thank you for accepting my comments on the phone. Thank you.
Thanks, Patrick. And I think both Andreas and I use the intangibles topic as a good example of where it may make sense for the IASB and the ISSB to think together in terms of the best approach.
That's my point.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just saying I agree with you. We agree with you. Nick, you're next, I think.
Thanks, Sue. And first, let me begin by congratulating EFRAG and particularly the working group on the report. I think it's a fantastic report. I think what's particularly important is an understanding that this is a heterogeneous group of resources, and certainly one size does not fit all for anything that we may think that fits in the intangible space. And indeed, like Jim highlighted, I find, you know, perhaps less appetite for further recognition on the balance sheet and even some scepticism around the further use of fair value. And so that takes us to other potential solutions. So just three observations around future-orientated expenses, perhaps from me. So first of all, I think these initiatives or suggestions that this should be an approach to look at have often stumbled on the definition of future-orientated expenses. And I observed that in some respects, the EFRAG recommendation sidestep the definition by saying this will either be through the eyes of management or providing information to users to let them make their own decisions. And perhaps that's a wise route to go. You also expressed, I think, some concern that some businesses may not have a good understanding of the intangibles that are essential to their business model. I think you said that. I would hope most businesses would have a very good understanding of those key drivers to their business model. So I hope that wouldn't be an impediment here. And then the last point, which perhaps ties this together, and again, goes back to Patrick's point, is that clearly within the financial statements, it won't be a place to describe the entity's business model, but making those linkages to what might be a management commentary around the business model and what's happening to intangibles and future-orientated expenses, again, just highlights the importance of connectivity in this space. Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Linda.
Thanks, Sue. I don't want to repeat a lot of what's already been said, but I just want to make a couple of comments. I really enjoyed reading this paper, and it's nice when we get a chance to enjoy reading something at this stage of the game. I've been doing this for a long time, so I just compliment the work that's been done. It's very much on my mind, the need to move something forward in intangibles. I do want to mention, though, that this is, I think, is a large project. And I say that because when you say the word intangibles, depending on the background of the person you're talking to, many different things come to mind. And there's the easy ones to understand, like assembled workforce or customer relationships. But each business has its own strategy and its own culture. And so what a business person may think of as an intangible on which they build a strategy to run their business may be very, very different. And so we're talking about potentially a large population of elements here. And so I think along the way, we have to remind ourselves of that and make sure we're doing the necessary research along the way and involving preparers and users, and et cetera. I also think that this one, to build on comments just made, particularly from Patrick, this is a project that is going to require us to really do a good job of cooperating, because it's not just a standard setting project. Auditors are going to have to be involved because it's new territory. Regulators are going to have to be involved because in some jurisdictions they govern what goes in management commentary, and so we have to work with them. And also there's the notion of the sustainability board. So any way you look at this, this is not something we can just do on our own. We're going to have to make sure we're involving other people from other disciplines. All of that said, in terms of the actual questions, just a couple of comments. In paragraph 2.8, you talk about the notion of, IS 38 requiring costs, but difficulties with even getting cost information, let alone fair value. And I think that is fundamental to where we go with this. And that leads me personally to believe that you may want to phase an approach on this. And so to start out with, if you started with something that was more oriented around disclosures, just to get people used to thinking about the topic and identifying intangibles and understanding what users really need from more information without also adding the notion of recognition and measurement in a first phase, you might find that you learn a lot in that first phase and also get preparers over the notion of the commercial sensitivity. They may, in fact, be able to explain more without having this hesitancy to go forward if we focused initially on disclosure. And then you could get into recognition and measurement in the next phase. And so going through the approaches, the notion of conditional recognition appealed to me personally. Little concerned with OCI because OCI isn't well understood now, and this would just be making it more complicated, which you already noticed in your paper. And so maybe if we started building with disclosures, started looking at a cost model that could be understood and engage people in how they track their costs and what should be included in cost and what wouldn't be included in cost. And I, like others, have a big fear of trying to do this at fair value because I'm not sure how reliable those numbers would be. But just some comments for thought.
Thanks, Linda. Leonardo.
Thank you, Sue. And thank you, Chiara and Erasmus, for the presentation. In my view, the discussion paper identifies all the relevant issues that we are hearing on intangible assets. There is a strong demand for more information about intangible assets, and so we think that the ISB should do something on this topic. And in my view, the EFRAG discussion paper is an excellent starting point. Regarding the best way to go, this is a very difficult question. Our preliminary view is that at least as a first step, the ISB should try to improve the existing disclosure as suggested in paragraph 4 and 5 of the discussion paper. Relating to the measurement, I understand that the fair value of internally generated intangible would be a useful information for investors, but I believe that estimating the fair value of an internally generated intangible asset would be too judgmental. This is because, at least in some cases, this may require estimating the fair value of the entire company. And this, in my view, is not the role of a preparer of financial statement. Last comment, as already mentioned by others, we think that the ISB should work on intangible in joint with the new board on the sustainability reporting. Thank you.
Thank you. EH.
Okay, thank you, Sue. Okay, this discussion paper is very insightful, and the paper covers most of major points and issues, and we have a couple of comments on, I'm not going to cover every single questions. The first is which way to go. There are three options, and determination of the units of intangibles for reporting purposes, and the last the types of information to include. So the first one is which way to go. The paper provided primarily three different options. One is recognition and measurement, information related to specific intangibles. And last thing is about the future expenses. We thought that we better take the second option, information related to specific intangibles, because number one, option one, recognition measurement, and option three, future oriented expenses are really focusing on the cost of expenses. And but I believe the information investors need from finance statement is not about the cost and expenses, particularly for the intangibles. The reason is because if you look at traditional classical businesses, which you heavily rely on property and plants, the cost and expenses somewhat shows what's going to be the value of the property and plant. But on the other hand, if you look at the intangibles, there is a little relationship between the cost and the value. And what the investors, shareholders want to know about the intangible is the value of the intangibles, not the cost which was spent for the creation. It's because it is not because the success and fail, but what I mean is that in some instances cost is just go away, and in some instances even with the small pieces of cost and expenses, company may be able to create a huge amount of intangible. So there is a little relation correlation between cost and value. That's the one clear points we have to address. So using cost and expenses will give little information to the investors. So that's why we prefer to provide information related to specific intangibles. And what I can say is that in the first place, we may be able to figure out what is the key intangibles, and we'll be able to provide relevant information, the nature of the intangibles, how it will contribute to business, how it will contribute to the cash flow. So that's going to be the first stage of providing information on intangibles. But second or third phase, we will definitely will be able to provide the value of the key intangibles. By doing that, investors will be able to look at the picture, what is the key intangible of the company, which will be a key driver of the business, and it will be able to link the key intangible with the cash flow. I think that's eventually the way to go. So I would say that the option two, which is providing information related to specific intangible, is very important. And in this respect, very important point is that we have to figure out what will be the unit of reporting. And in this paper, you used the term key intangibles. Key intangible is what? We have to think about it. If you think about terms about the intangibles, we can see there are two different types of intangibles. One is the individual pieces of sort of standalone intangibles, such as like skills, team spirit, reputation, patents. This is really a small standalone minor pieces of information. The other side is that I would say combined or assembled pieces of intangibles, which is, for instance, a platform of the business, or intellectual properties, combined intellectual properties, such as pharmaceutical products or like musical pieces, okay, movies, or online games. And this is kind of, I would say, combined or connected or assembled intangibles. So my point is that when we report information related to specific intangibles, the intangibles, unit of intangibles should be sort of connected, combined, assembled intangibles. By doing that, we'll be able to show to the investors, well, this combined intangible is a business driver. And, investors will be able to understand, this is the animal creating value, creating the cash flow. So I think for this specific intangibles, the most critical thing is that we have to figure out what's going to be the unit of intangibles. And the answer might be, from my point, is an assembled or combined intangibles. And about what kind of information should be disclosed about these specific intangibles, well, I can say that, first of all, nature of intangible should be disclosed and reported. For the platform businesses, they have separate different type of platforms, and then we will be able to enumerate different platforms. Or for bio company, we can show different major bio products, and then we'll be able to disclose information such as how these intangibles, combined intangibles, are created, which will be the narration of how they were created. And you can say that the intangibles are created by R&D, or you can say it was purchased by third parties, or you can say we did it through outsourcing. So this is kind of information to be provided with these key intangibles. And what I can point out is that in the first stage, we'll be simply providing information on those key intangibles, such as nature of intangibles and how they are created. But eventually, in the second stage and third stage, we'll be able to provide additional information, such as record of cash flows generated from these business intangibles. So we'll be able to show, well, let's say a company has three different platforms. Then we'll be able to provide information of cash flows, past cash flows for platform one, platform two, platform three. It's going to be the, 3 years, 5 years cash flows came out from those platforms. Or it could be the cash flow came out from bio products. So I think it's going to be the second stage disclosure. And probably at the last minute, we'll be able to include future cash flow, which are expected from individual intangible assets. Again, platforms, or bio products, or online games, or whatever. So I think that's what we can think about. I'm not saying that this is the only scenario, but I think in this way, we will be able to show how the intangibles are created, how the intangibles are contributing to the cash flow and business. So that, as Chiara said, KSB has independent research in the past, like it was 2018, we were trying to develop a independent statement which present value of major intangibles, key intangibles, but that is primarily based on the valuation of future cash flow, not based on the cost and expenses of the past. And I would say that this is one possibility. So if possible, we will continue. Actually, we have been in touch with IFRAG in the past 2 years ago, and we stopped in the middle, but probably we will continue our project based on this combined key intangibles, which will show how the intangibles are contributing to the business and cash flow. Thank you.
Thanks, EH. I'm conscious of time, so I want everybody to make their points, but if you could try and be as efficient as possible, that would be really helpful. Rodrigo, thank you.
Well, thank you, Sue. I will try to be efficient here. We believe that disclosure will provide a different level of comprehension, but it's not a solution, and you know that you don't expect to present a solution. However, should be disclosure a first solution for almost everything? We don't know, but we know that the IFRS standards are demanding more and more and more information and more disclosure, and in our opinion, the financial statement are becoming something like a book. And what's the problem? The problem is too much information distract, take attention from what is really important. I'm not saying that the information included in the paper is not relevant. The point is we expect to discuss more solutions than disclosure. Thank you.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Nobu, I'm hoping we can hear you.
Yes, I'll try. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfect.
Okay, thank you very much. So we think the discussion paper is another example that demonstrates the need for the ISB to clarify concepts relating to what type of information should be provided in the financial statements and what type of information should be provided outside the financial statements. We think one of such concepts is the prohibition of the recognition of internally generated intangibles. And in our view, the scope of items being recognized should not be expanded, but there may be room for improvement for related disclosures. Thank you.
Thank you. Very efficient. Helena, did you want to come back in and make an additional comment?
I just wanted to say that, the AOSSG members ultimately thought that the combination of the approaches and perhaps the conditional measurement with the reverse impairment would be probably the best way to go. However, there was a support for the phased approach, as Linda mentioned, and there was a support that the first phase should really focus on disclosures of currently unrecognized internally generated intangible assets, and perhaps sticking to the current definition of the intangible assets, because that could add value to the users in relatively short time. And only when the first phase is finalized, then perhaps, the next phase could be looking at the redefinition of the asset, or perhaps looking at the this other disclosures about other resources and so on. But really, really facing the project is extremely important, because as Linda mentioned, what we learn in each phase will focus, the further recognition and measurement, and perhaps the methods that would be selected. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Helena. So lots of interesting comments. Chiara, Rasmus, I don't know whether you wanted to say anything in response.
No, just to thank all the members for their interesting comments, and reiterating again the interest in cooperating and having your comments from your jurisdiction. Thanks a lot, and
Thank you, Chiara. Okay, with that, it's about 25 past, I think, if my clock is right. So I propose that we have a 10-minute break and then come back to move on to the strategic and agenda consultations. Thank you.